Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 55 of Dogcast Radio. In today's show, we discuss whether dogs know more than we think.
What we're trying to do is really measure that special bond that we feel with our animals, and one way to do that is to, in a scientific way, is to measure whether some dogs are able to tell when their owners are coming home.
We talk to a writer whose dog inspires her.
I'm fascinated by my own dog, and then to be able to sort of bring, you know, anything dog-related or animal-related at all to light is really rewarding.
And we also have Buddy's Diary and Puppy Playtime. But before all that, we have the Dogcast Radio News.
Hello, and welcome to a celebrity-packed Dogcast Radio News. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. Yes, today's programme is dedicated to the sometimes barking mad world of showbiz dogs.
Paris Hilton has hit the headlines for many reasons in connection with her dogs, and she did it again recently. According to Canine magazine, Paris's latest scheme is to cryogenically freeze her dogs when they die, so that they can be brought back to life later on. Not content with that, the heiress intends to have herself frozen after death, so that she too can be brought back to life.
I hear she describes her plans as cool. No pun probably intended. Paris's best celebrity pal, Nicole Richie, has an equally potty idea. And there is a pun intended there, because Nicole wants to see streetlights fitted with dog urinals. Apparently, dog urine can erode the metal of streetlights. But now, a Swedish inventor has come up with a rubber device that attaches to the post and directs the waste into the gutter. As if toilet training wasn't hard enough already, now we have a whole new aspect to get the hang of.
We all know the late Steve Irwin was crazy about crocodiles, but did you know his dog Suey was one of the great loves of his life? A large bronze statue of Steve and his family was recently unveiled at Australia Zoo to commemorate Steve Irwin Day, and of course Suey was included. The Staffordshire Bull Terrier was born on Christmas Day 1988 and was Steve's best mate from the moment she went to live with him as a small puppy. Suey accompanied her master on almost all his crocodile-catching adventures, receiving many injuries in the process. When Terry came into Steve's life, Suey was at first jealous, but the two were soon firm friends, and Steve always joked that Suey was his girlfriend. When Bindi and Robert arrived, Suey was protective and devoted. Steve revealed that many times a young Bindi fell asleep on Suey, who would lie still until Bindi was removed. Steve was heartbroken when the cancer that eventually killed Suey was diagnosed, but she had lived a long, exciting life in the bosom of a loving family. The statue commemorates the partnership between man and dog, as well as the many other aspects and achievements of Steve and his family.
And finally, we can reveal In Touch Weekly magazine's list of new most famous dogs in Hollywood. Coming in at number 5 is Jennifer Aniston's Corgi Terrier mix, Norman. At number 4 is Tori Spelling's pug, Mimi. You may have heard of Mariah Carey's penchant for applying makeup to her Jack Russell Terrier, Jack, who made it to number 3. The runner-up is Jessica Simpson's multi-poo, Daisy. But at number 1 is a dog who was at the centre of a storm recently. When Ellen DeGeneres gave her rescue dog Iggy, an Affenpinscher pup, to her hairdresser, she unwittingly stirred up a lot of trouble. The pup was taken back by the rescue shelter, leaving Ellen's hairdresser and family upset, with Ellen breaking down in tears on her TV show and catapulting Iggy to the top of the most famous Hollywood dog list.
And that's all from us on the Dogcast News Desk. Goodbye.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Does your dog know when you're coming home? Well, many dogs do seem to be able to in some way sense when their owner is returning. It's a compelling subject, and to find out more, I talked to Alex Sekiris, founder of OpenSourceScience.net and the Skeptigo podcast, about the latest research being done.
Well, actually, we're helping to facilitate and fund the research for experiments. And what we're trying to do is really measure that special bond that we feel with our animals. And one way to do that is to, in a scientific way, is to measure whether some dogs are able to tell when their owners are coming home.
I find this fascinating, this idea, you know, that they have this sense, this extra sense somehow of when that we are coming home, and it's not just hearing the engine, you know, or whatever. So it's fascinating. So what are the experiments then?
Well, I agree with you. It is fascinating, and I was just going to mention that I'm sure many of your listeners are probably familiar with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Rupert Sheldrick there in the UK, who actually did some very interesting experiments along these lines in the late 90s. And one of the things that we noticed is that there hasn't been a lot of follow-up research, even though this topic has been of great interest to dog and even cat owners who have noticed this behavior, just casually picked it up and noticed it among their pets.
What are the actual experiments? Now, how do you investigate this?
Well, that's interesting. In some respects, it's pretty simple to measure it yourself as kind of a first pass, and that's what we're really asking folks who are interested to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in this experiment, if you think that perhaps you have an animal that is especially adept at exhibiting this, we've set up a website at dogsthatknow.com, a pretty easy one to remember, and you can go there and actually gives you instructions for how you might run a simple do-it-yourself test as kind of a precursor to seeing if you want to be involved in a university-level research project.
Hmm.
And if you like, I can describe kind of how you would do a self-test.
Yes, yes, please.
Great. Well, a real simple way is if you have a friend, you might invite the friend over while you go out and run an errand. And your friend would then simply observe the dog's behavior, noting every couple minutes where the dog is sitting in the house or walking around or whatever the dog is doing. And then at some time, not predetermined by the two of you, your friend would call you up on the cell phone and say, come on home. And then you would continue to monitor the dog's behavior on the trip home. And what researchers have found in the past, and it's kind of interesting, is that at the moment that the dog owner has the intention that they're going to go home, that is, they've received the message and they say, now I'm going to go home, often the dog will show a behavior of anticipating the owner coming home. So whatever that is for that particular dog, if it's going by the window, if it's cuddling up by the door, whatever that might be. And many times researchers have found the anticipatory behavior to be quite dramatic in that the dog will exhibit that behavior maybe 80% of the time while the owner is coming home, while only perhaps 20% of the time when the owner is not on the way home.
Mm, that's fascinating. I think what I find interesting there is I have looked at Sheldrake's book. It's the fact, it's the moment when the dog owner decides he's on the way home that the dog reacts to, isn't it?
Well, that is interesting, isn't it? Because it maybe provides a clue or a key into what's going on. Now, we don't know what's going on, and that's why we really are trying to promote more researchers looking into this so we can investigate this phenomena and really understand. So we don't have any firm conclusions at this point. But it certainly fits with that, again, that special connection that we feel with our animals, and it just would fit with how they might exhibit a behavior like this. And that there is, when we have that connection or when we mentally think about that connection with our dog, perhaps there is some kind of transmission of information that we don't understand that's going on.
It's fascinating. On a smaller scale, my husband will often sort of say, he'll stand up, you know, he'll stand up to go and get a cup of tea, or he'll stand up to go to the toilet, or he'll stand up, whatever. But the time that he stands up and he's going to walk the dog, you know, Buddy knows, and he's on his feet and looking at him, are we going, are we going? And my husband will turn to me and go, how does he know? How does he know this time it's a walk?
Right. There's so many interesting behaviors. You know, here in the U.S., and I think this made pretty widespread, got pretty widely spread across the country, across the world in terms of coverage, but there was a cat in a retirement home mm-hmm. that seemed to sense when folks were about to pass.
Mm.
And perhaps you've covered that on the show, but there's another one that even human beings don't have any idea what's going on, but somehow there's a connection there between the animal and the people that care for that animal that we can't fully explain.
Yes, yeah, that was amazing when the cat, that it would sort of curl up on the bed of the person who was sort of within hours of death. And I mean, it was so reliable, wasn't it, that the care staff would phone the people's relatives and say, you better come in now.
Right.
That was incredible, wasn't it? I mean, what in that case, I mean, what might it be picking up on there, do you think?
Well, you know, it'd be difficult to speculate, and certainly I'm not in a position to speculate. Mm. I don't want to speculate because, you know, the other side of this, Julie, is that this research or even this notion is somewhat controversial among scientists. It certainly isn't among dog lovers and cat lovers because we know it, we live it, we see it every day. But scientists are uncomfortable with the notion that there can be some kind of communication that we don't fully understand. And that's really even more of an incentive for us to push forward with this research in a very objective, scientific way and try and come around to an understanding that everyone can feel at least assured is really going on.
The one thing I was going to mention, obviously in the sort of do-it-yourself test that you've mentioned you can carry out with yourself, your dog and a friend, one possibility could be if the observer is aware that the person now is on the way home, obviously that observer can or could transmit, you know, different signals to the dog. I'm excited now. I'm watching you, you know, with a different expectation now. So how do you get around that in the experiments that you do?
Yes, and that's an excellent question. There's actually a number of different pitfalls that you have to watch out for in an experiment, and when these experiments have been done collaboratively with more skeptical researchers, which is a good thing, they've pointed out a number of different behaviors and pitfalls that you have to watch out for. What we're looking for, the flip side of that, though, Julie, is that really those are more the exception than the rule. You know, as we've gone out and tried to talk to dog owners, they're surprisingly aware of just the common sense pitfalls. People say, oh, I think it's probably a pattern because we always come home at the same time. Or my car is pretty noisy, and it seems to be that within a couple minutes when perhaps my dog hears the car. And other people are quite clear that they've eliminated those possibilities by they've had a long-term experience. Let me start by saying, you know, most people who are going to want to do the do-it-yourself experiment already have an inkling that this is going on because they've observed it just naturally. Mm. And that's important, an important first clue. And then secondly, on the first do-it-yourself test, again, it's an initial screening. When we do the follow-up research, we'll actually have a video camera there. We'll have the whole setup. There won't be anyone in the house, or it will just be purely the normal kind of goings-on in the house. So it'll be much more rigorous when we take that next step. So the first do-it-yourself step is just kind of a first cut. But maybe to answer your question also, for even the person who's doing it themselves, I think just being aware of the point that you mentioned in terms of not cueing your dog or not giving any extra signals is a wonderful way to make sure that you're not contaminating the signal.
Mm.
And then I'd say, I guess the final thing is, it's how strong the signal is. If your dog, if your pet is only slightly more likely to visit the door or the window on the way home, then that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with your dog or that he or she doesn't love you or anything like that. It just means that this particular behavior hasn't been reinforced or isn't strongly inclined for this dog.
I mean, I think as well, you know, you have to think, people, humans, are all different. We all have different talents. You know, some of us can play the piano well, some of us can drive fast, you know, whatever your skill is. Now, it's quite possible that there is this range of skills with dogs that we have no clue what's going on. But, you know, for example, I'm thinking the dogs that pick up on epilepsy and can warn that that's going on.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe there is a range of skills and just, you know, certain dogs have them and certain dogs don't. And as you say, there's nothing wrong with your dog if it does or doesn't do it. It just has different abilities and skills.
Right, absolutely. You know, the other thing, Julie, that would be interesting on a long-range scale is this is totally behavior that's perhaps is an evolutionary advantage for the animal. We can certainly imagine how that might happen, and it could be a natural evolutionary byproduct of wanting to know when a leader of the pack is coming home. But it's really nothing that's being reinforced. It'd be interesting to speculate what would happen if we, over a long period of time, tried to develop this talent and tried to reinforce this behavior among animals. It would really be kind of an interesting long-range experiment. So if anyone out there has a young puppy and wants to make that puppy famous, set up a way to reinforce every time that puppy knows when you're coming home, when you're on your way home. No one has done that. I just think it'd be kind of fun to imagine what would happen if someone really set out over a long period of time, several years, to develop and strongly reinforce this behavior. Because as you mentioned, we're really looking at animals that have just kind of stumbled upon this knowing.
Yeah. I mean, presumably as well, I don't know how feasible this would be or advisable even, but if you could take dogs that strongly had this ability and then breed from them, if they were suitable breeding stock, you know, presumably, again, you're going to be reinforcing that behavior in the offspring.
Absolutely. That's very, very interesting. And I really hadn't even thought of that. You know, it's also interesting that as we go out and talk to more and more people, it's amazing how many people have already experienced this behavior in their animals. So again, if there is anyone out there who is interested in participating, we'd really, really love to have you join us. We are offering a $1,000 U.S. prize to any dog who successfully participates, and there can be more than one animal that does. And another fun aspect of it is the experiment is going to be published on the web, and you'll be able to see the progress that your animal and other animals are making, and read stories about people who've had success with it. So I think it'll be something that people can really get involved with and have a lot of fun with.
Yeah, yeah. Now, where do people find that information then?
Well, it is through opensourcescience.net, but what we've done is set up a little bit of a simpler domain name to go to, and that's www.dogsthatknow.com, all as one word, dogs that know.
Okay, so if anybody is interested in participating or later on finding out the results, it's dogsthatknow.com they need to go to.
Right, that'd be a good starting point. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing we're collecting, Julie, is if you have a story, we've collected a number of stories from folks who say, gee, you know, we had a dog who has passed on, but would really do this all the time. My husband would come home in odd hours. I would always know. We'd love to hear those stories. So please come and join us on the website and offer up your story as well. That's a great way to contribute also.
Mm-hmm. So really, wherever people are in the world, they can contribute in some way to this.
Right. And we are not, we are focused primarily in the United States, but that does not mean that we're excluding anyone in the UK or wherever else your listeners might be. If they have an exceptional dog and we find them, we'll find a way to incorporate them into the experiment.
Excellent, excellent. And when do you expect this to, sort of, how long will this run for?
It will probably run for a couple of years, but again, we'll probably start to see results, we expect, towards the end of this year.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is going to be fascinating, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it's a question that we, all of us who have animals and experience that, again, that special connection that we have with them, I think a lot of us are really going to want to know if we apply scientific methods to that special bond, what we can find out and what we can know.
If you have a dog that does know when you're coming home, get in touch with Alex. And if you're not sure, try that experiment and find out. To read more about the research, follow the link on the Dogcast Radio site.
The average temperature of a healthy dog is 101 degrees Fahrenheit, but it can range from 99 to 102.5.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime. If you want to give your dog a festive treat, try this recipe. 1.5 cups of whole wheat flour, 1.25 cups of grated cheddar cheese, 1/4 cup of margarine, softened, a pinch of salt, and some milk. Let the cheese stand until it reaches room temperature, then cream the cheese with the margarine, salt, and flour. Add enough milk to form into a ball and chill for 1/2 hour. Roll out on a floured surface. Cut into shapes and bake at 375 degrees Fahrenheit for 15 minutes or until slightly brown and firm. You could hang the biscuits on your Christmas tree and give your dog one each day in the run-up to Christmas. For more recipes, try robinsfyi.com. While your biscuits bake, you could read a Christmas story on the internet about a bearded collie on the beardy.net site, or send some Christmas cards on the kateconnick.com site. There are links to all these on the Dogcast Radio site to help you and your dog have a happy and fun time. So until next time, have fun with your dog and make sure your dog has Christmas fun with you. Merry Christmas.
Dogs have twice as many muscles for moving as a human.
We featured a short story by Chandra Miller in episode 47 of Dogcast Radio. She's a writer whose own dog Marley has inspired her work, and her love of dogs has led her to cover other dog stories too.
I guess it started, covering dog-related stories started actually through a contact I made with Marley at the park, because I always take him to the park in the mornings and we talk to other dog people there. And the very first story I wrote was about a man who, you know, was a dog lover and had done a lot with his dogs, and he ended up happening along when a child was being mauled by a dog, and he, you know, swung into action and helped to save her and stuff. And so I ended up, you know, even though that was a sad story about this child who was injured, you know, by a dog, it was kind of neat to be able to start on this path of, you know, writing about animal related things. And the independent newspaper that I wrote for after that asked me to sort of take the animal beat and, you know, write more about animals. So I've been doing that ever since.
Yeah, but I think that's great, because if you can turn an interest, you know, and sort of make it part of your career, you're going to get further with that, aren't you? Because you are interested.
Oh yeah, it's you know, I'm fascinated by my own dog, and then to be able to sort of bring, you know, anything dog related or animal related at all to light is really rewarding. And it's, you know, it's energizing to learn about. I always learn so much when I write the stories.
Yeah. Now, your blog is called Living Mindfully.
Yeah.
And I sort of, Marley works his way into it quite a lot, doesn't he?
Oh, yes. Yes, he does. He keeps me mindful. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's kind of a cliche. It's been said a lot that, you know, dogs and animals in general live in the present moment, and they kind of keep us centered and present. But I've just really found that to be true, you know, over and over again, that he's sort of my grounding. He, you know, just being with him, and my cat as well. But it just sort of keeps me, you know, looking at the now and being able to stay present in a way that, you know, is kind of difficult, I think, for humans to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to plan, and we tend to worry, and we tend to look back, and You know, he's, in a way, he's kind of my role model. He just, you know, he just kind of goes for it. He's just there doing what he's doing, you know. He's eating, he's eating. He's on a walk, he's on a walk. He's not thinking ahead, you know, and that's just, you know, that's just natural, the natural state for animals.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful thing to witness. So.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of your blog entries dealt with, I think you took Marley to the groomers and then you were walking back on your own. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, and you were sort of saying, which I identified with, what is the point of sort of being out here walking without him? Because, you know, what's the point of waiting for the traffic if there's no dog for them to look at and for me to show up?
Right.
Yeah, and I think that is it. When you have your dog with you, I've certainly done things and appreciated things in a totally different way that I wouldn't have done if he wasn't with me.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes. I see him, you know, I'm very aware of what he's doing when we're on a walk. And so if I see him starting to alert, you know, on a squirrel in the distance or something, you know, I'm right there with him and I'm trying to sort of corral him so he doesn't pull my arm off. But, you know, it does keep you really, you know, focused on some things that you normally wouldn't even probably notice. You know, I would just be walking along thinking my thoughts. I wouldn't really be noticing my environment the way he does. So Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I also liked you described somebody walking a dog and being so out of tune with the dog that the sort of the dog's having trying to have a poo and she's just dragging him along. And
sad.
I know. And again, yeah, you have to be in the moment, but you do have to be in tune with them as well. It's you know, it takes you out of yourself in a way.
Yeah, I think I said something like, you know, may I never be so preoccupied that I don't notice when Marley's having a poo.
Yes.
You know, I really value the connection between us. And when I'm, you know, out with him, you know, even if I'm with other people and he's playing with their dogs or whatever, you know, he's my primary focus and I'm always aware of what he's doing and, you know, where he's heading, you know.
Now Marley's, he's still under two, is he?
He turned two in August,
so okay,
two and 2 months.
Yeah. So he's still a very young dog, and you've sort of achieved quite a lot with his training, haven't you? Can you tell us about that?
Well, I guess it's all relative. I mean, we've done some stuff. We started with just, you know, basic manners classes when he was pretty young, and he just seemed to really take to it, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was something that I felt like, you know, was good for him and good for me as well. It was kind of a bonding thing. And so I guess it was last year we found out about this opportunity to try doing a show sort of thing, a trial, with the St. Hubert's Companion Dog Sports Program, which is a fairly new venue, I guess, over here. And it's a lot more relaxed than, say, the AKC and things like that. It's open to mixed breeds, and it's very novice-friendly and stuff. And so we started training for that, and, you know, basically he has to heel on the leash in a pattern, and then he has to heel off the leash in a figure eight around two people standing, I think, 6 or 8 feet apart, something like that. And he has to do a stand stay and have somebody come and pet him and not move. And a down stay where another dog is active in the ring for a little bit.
Mm.
And then a jump, which involves a sit stay and then coming to me and stuff. And yeah, the first several times we tried, he did beautifully on just about everything except for the jump. He just going around the jump. He couldn't figure out, he couldn't see the point, I guess, of, you know, coming over the thing. He just sort of ran around and straight to me. And so we worked on that a lot. And so we haven't got our title yet. We have 2 legs towards our first title. You have to have 3 legs, and then you get your Novice A title. The very first leg that we got, he took first place in that particular competition, so I was really pleased, and I know he has the potential to do very well. It's just a matter of whether I have the time and energy to sort of keep it up and, you know, keep moving. moving towards the next challenge.
Yeah.
And I just found out the next trial is coming up in November, so we're starting to gear up a little bit for that, practice a little bit for that.
Yeah, yeah. And Marley, you know, he's a standard poodle. He's quite an active breed, isn't he? What training methods, you know, have you found work, you know, motivate him?
Oh, clicker training from the very beginning. Even though I was really skeptical about it at the beginning, I almost didn't sign up for the class because it had this newfangled clicker thing, and you know, I was dubious about using food because I sort of thought the dog should, you know, listen to me out of, you know, respect for the relationship, which is, you know, a common mm-hmm. perception that people have. I've just found that he's so motivated by food, and he just loves it. He just lights up when the clicker comes out, and I've come around to the idea of using food, and I don't have a problem with it so much. I have one of those pouches that I just, you know, carry on a walk, you know, and I just have little tiny bits of cheese and stuff, and I just, you know, I click him for good behavior, even when we're not specifically training, you know, for an actual exercise. I often use the clicker on our walks because I'm trying to encourage him to be less reactive with other dogs. And I've even used the clicker when there's something he's afraid of. For example, this summer we had a really bad thunderstorm, and we hadn't had any storms in quite a while. And he had never really been scared of thunder before, but he was obviously petrified. So I got the clicker out and started using it to, you know, just ask him to do some very simple things that I knew he could do, and, you know, with his eyes closed, you know,
mm-hmm.
and got him to kind of focus on something other than the thunder, and build his confidence with it, and give him a good, you know, something good to associate with it, and I'm sold on clicker training. Mm. I've seen, you know, great things, and I just love the idea that you emphasize the positive, and you know, you don't use corrections really at all, you know, unless there's a really extreme situation. So it's all about just reinforcing.
You
know, the behavior that you want.
Yeah, I think definitely if with Buddy, we've tried clicking. And he kind of picks up, particularly with tricks, not so much with basic training, you know, but particularly with tricks, as soon as you get the stuff out, you know, he's excited and you can see him sort of focus and think, right, what have I got to do and how can I get the, you know, the click and the treat? And, you know, it really does pinpoint to them, that's what I want from you. And it's so quick, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, like when he was having trouble with the jump, that's what we ended up doing, was clicking the exact moment that he, you know, went over the jump, and not worrying so much about, you know, the sit stay and the, you know, the finish and all that. It was just about, okay, let's get him over the jump and show him this is what we want. And before long, he's jumping back and forth and, you know, all happy about it. So, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. But I think another thing that you've been very honest about in your blog is the fact that sort of dog training, it's not a steady progression. You know, you don't always sort of pick up where you left off yesterday and build another block on the, you know, sometimes you have a bad day, don't you?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. And especially with a young dog, I mean, he's definitely progressed a lot since he was, you know, a year or a year and a half old. We, you know, we've worked a lot on the recall, which is, you know, plain language is just having him sprint back to me when, you know, when I call.
Yeah.
But we're still having a lot of trouble with certain distractions. And lately, I don't know if it's just him growing into his personality or what, but he likes to run after people and bark at them when he's off the leash. And it's weird because he never barks at people really when he's on the leash, unless they're acting really strangely. But he embarrasses me sometimes when he does that, and I feel terrible about, you know, frightening people. Some people take it in stride. I mean, it's happened, I think, twice in the last month or two. And so, yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, reinforcing that recall over and over and finding ways to practice it in a safe place.
Yeah, yeah. I think sometimes with, you know, particularly with friendly breeds and sort of dogs that are well socialized, it's just like, although it's unnerving having a big dog, particularly a big black, you know, a big dark dog running towards
you.
But I think sometimes from the dog's point of view, it's just, hey, I'm here, notice me. But it's, as you say, it's how it's perceived by the person. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. Now, I know you, obviously, you know, you love your dog and you have a great time with him and you put a lot of time and effort into his training. But you've got really, you know, you've got really nice plans, because you've got plans for Marley that will give a bit back to, you know, society in general, haven't you? Because you want him to be a pat dog, don't you?
That has always been sort of my dream for him. And I think he would really like it, because he does enjoy just sort of leaning up against people and, you know, getting scritches and attention. And so eventually I hope to get him in a class with the Delta Society, which is a really well-respected national program over here. That's sort of why we're working on his reactivity that I mentioned before, where he does sort of go off on other dogs, and he needs to be able to focus on his job. So everything I do with him is sort of geared, you know, in that direction. For one thing, I just, you know, I want a dog that's polite and well-behaved and that I can take places. Mm. But, you know, I also would really love for him to be able to, you know, comfort people, you know, who are ill or in some way, you know, confined.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a lovely way for him to be, you know, that to me would be, you know, I think the ultimate. I don't really care about titles and, you know, competitions and things like that. I think that the goal of the therapy dog is primary.
Yeah.
So, but we'll see. It's a process. He's still young, so.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, I mean, certainly with Buddy, you know, by two he'd calm down a little bit, but you know, he's still going through that calming down, you know, and he's nearly five, and you know, some of it is just waiting, you know, but yeah. I do think that the therapy dog is such a, you know, a valuable thing to do, because I mean, I've seen it only in sort of old people's homes, but they value that visit so much, and it means so much, and that contact, you know, and it's so valuable. It gives such a lot back.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just from my own experience, I mean, I've been dealing with chronic illness for several years, and I feel like Marley has been a huge part of my healing process, just having him in my life. And when Marley came into my life, it just felt like so special, you know, that here's this puppy that I'm watching grow up and helping him. And he, even though it's work to have him, because I do have to, you know, exercise him every day and, you know, the training and stuff takes energy, he gives me so much energy back. So he's been a wonderful part of my life, and to share that with other people would be great.
Yeah, yeah. And I know one of your other plans is for Marley to be a blood donor, isn't it?
Yes, we've actually started that already. Yeah, he's given blood one time. There's an emergency vet clinic here in town that has a blood donor program. They have about 80 dogs, and they also use cats, so they have a cat blood bank as well. And it's a commitment for at least a year, every other month or so, for the dog to come in and give blood. And they take about a half pint at a time, and have to sedate the dog. And when I heard about what all it involved, I was a little taken aback, and I was kind of nervous, because, you know, he's my baby, and the thought of sedating him sort of put me back a little bit. But it ended up being that I asked him. I was actually inspired by some of the guests that you've had that have talked about communicating, you know, with your dog.
Mm, yeah.
And so I just, in a quiet moment with him, I ended up just sort of talking to him and explaining to him what this would be like, and just I just tried to get real quiet in myself and then ask him, you know, how do you feel about that? And one of your guests said, you know, you just need to pay attention to anything, any impression or feeling or whatever. And I just had this feeling of openness and trust. And so I felt like, you know, that's okay. This is the first time I've tried this technique, so I don't know if I'm just making it up, but, you know, I wanted to give it a go. And I told him, you know, if you hate it, you know, we don't have to do it, and, yeah. You know, and everything. And so we went in for the initial assessment because they have to do a temperament test.
Hmm.
And he was so calm in the waiting room, just laying at my feet. And, of course, you know, I had the clicker, and that helps, but he's just a very calm dog in general. And always has been. And so when they took him back, they didn't even end up doing the temperament test because they could tell he was going to be so easy to handle. You know, everybody was just, you know, falling in love with him back there, and they brought him out and said, oh yes, you know, he's a shoo-in. You know, they had to do some blood work, but, you know, once we got the blood work back, pending those results, they said, you know, definitely, you know, he's going to do fine.
Oh,
so that made me feel really good that he's, you know, that he's just, he, you know, he's a trusting dog, and he's been with me since he was 8 weeks old, and you know, and I've tried to socialize him to different experiences, so that made me feel really good. And so a few weeks later, when we went back, you know, after they got the blood work and, you know, everything was fine, we made an appointment for the first blood draw, and you know, I was watching him, and, you know, I had explained to him again, you know, what we're doing, and you know, as we walked up to the front doors, he's all happy and eager to go inside. And when he came out, he was, you know, he was groggy from the sedation, but
yeah.
He could still jump into the car. And, you know, he was, I don't know if I want to say this, but he actually ended up, messing in the car because of the way the medicine, loosens his bowels.
Yeah.
So that was pleasant. I was just merging onto the interstate when,
oh, dear.
Coming from the back seat. I felt so bad for him. I mean, they didn't tell me that maybe you might want to walk your dog before you get him in the car.
No.
So now I know. But anyways, but so when we got home, he just slept, you know, the rest of the afternoon. But by evening, he was, you know, he was kind of tossing his head and ready to play again. So I'm really pleased. And again, you know, it's a nice way to share, you know, him in some way with the world, because I do dote on him, and I, you know, I have spent a fair amount of money on him, and, you know, he's a purebred dog, and, you know, there's certain amount of, you know, guilt with that, I guess, because he's not a shelter dog, so I feel like I just want to, you know, give back as much as I can with him. And as an added bonus, they give you free vaccinations and, you know, a discount on you know, all of your services, so it's a kind of a win-win-win situation.
Yeah. And, you know, I imagine it can be life and death, literally, for some dogs to have that blood supply there. So, again, it's a wonderful gift to give back, isn't it?
Oh, yes. And I thought it was just a local blood bank, but apparently they send the blood all the way, you know, all around America and even down into the Caribbean.
Wow.
So that's quite an important program.
Yeah, yeah. Now, obviously, your life is absolutely full. What are your... We'll take the writing goals first. What are your writing goals for the future?
Yeah, I guess I haven't talked about the main writing project, which is writing a memoir about raising him and just sort of, you know, everything we've talked about recovering from illness and, you know, learning to be more in the moment and, you know, basically all the sort of, you know, I don't want to say lessons, but, you know, all the insights I've gotten from having him in my life. And then, you know, and then also the ways that I have influenced him and sort of the way we've grown together over the last couple of years. So that's an ongoing goal.
And what are your training goals with Marley?
Well, we have the next trial coming up, which is the day after Thanksgiving. So that's late November. And so we're just preparing for that. We really haven't practiced a whole lot lately with the jump and the, you know, I have him do a lot of sit stays and down stays and some heeling on occasion, but I think I just need to get sort of buckle down and do that more regularly. And, And also, I need to take him to places where other dogs are also working because he gets very distracted. He's not really used to the trial environment, being a novice still. And so there are some open training sessions where you can go and just practice with your dog while other people are working with their dogs, and I think that would be really good for us. So that's the immediate, you know, sort of formal goal. But then there's the ongoing goal of the recall, you know, and practicing that and reinforcing that and coming away from distractions. And I'm also working on, that goes along with the recall, him stopping when I say whoa, you know, you can't really call your dog back to you and expect him to turn on a dime and come racing back. They have to first stop off there running away. So I've been working on this whoa thing, and he does pretty well unless racing towards something really interesting. So we sort of need to keep upping the ante on that and practicing that. I also have had this goal for a while of getting together with a friend and just Marley gets really possessive. This is the one thing about clicker training. It's a little difficult. Is you always have treats on you, so he can get kind of snappish with other dogs when he thinks they're going to get my treats.
Mm.
So I've been working on that with him with his best buddy, like in the park, and he's calmed down a lot. He, you know, as I, you know, I first treat Albie, his friend, and then I treat him, and so he's gotten to understand. Okay, if I settle down and let Albie have something, then I will have something and I don't have to bite him. So, but I want to work on that with dogs that he doesn't know as well. So that's something. And letting him be in his crate when other dogs are approaching him, because that was something at the last trial type environment that he had a lot of trouble with. He felt, I think, threatened being in his crate and having dogs make eye contact. So I'd like to set up some situations like in a training class where we're just in the corner and I'm giving him treats for being quiet, that kind of thing, while he's in his crate. We have a collapsible crate that we can take along.
Yeah.
Those are the main things, I guess. And then, you know, looming in the distance at some point is the class for the, you know, for therapy work, which I hope to get into hopefully sometime next year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're going to have your hands full, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, the best of luck with it all.
Thank you.
What a great dog owner and a great writer too. Chandra has very kindly written another story for Dogcast Radio, which we'll be bringing you in the new year. To read Chandra's blog, follow the link on our site.
Dog fur, like that of all mammals, is made up of the protein keratin and dead skin cells.
Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. I know at times I can get confused, but just at the moment I know exactly what's going on, and it's Star that is confused. Two tiny dogs have come to live in our house. They are called Remy and Troy, and they live mostly in a crate that is far too big for them, if you ask me. I thought Chihuahuas were small, but these guys are so tiny they must be very young pups, and must have to stay in their crate for safety. They're a breed of dog called Rat, which I had never heard of before, but I learn a little every day. They are very friendly little dogs, and always come up to the bars of their crate to sniff and generally pass the time of day. They smell very interesting, and they seem just as interested in my scent. The food they get sends tasty, drool-inducing wafts all round the house, sometimes puppy food reminding me of my own younger days, sometimes cottage cheese, sometimes scrambled egg, which is one of my favourites. All these things are apparently protein. There's something else I've learned. I love protein. The Rat dogs do come out for walks, but just around the house so far, and then they spend most of their time on my people's shoulders. It's very odd, and I've never seen a dog travel like that before. But again, it must be only until they grow into big, strong dogs like me. I like the latest addition to our household, but Star has made it very clear that he doesn't like being ousted from her position as the smallest dog around. She rears up on her hind legs and peers into the crate, which is nearly as big as her own one. Then she dances all round the cage, sniffing and whining and growling and staring. When she builds up to the inevitable bark, she gets a blast from my old enemy water pistol. It's so funny to see her drop back onto all fours again, shaking her head to get the water off and retreating to a safe distance from the rat dog's crate. As soon as the rat dogs start moving again, she's back up at the cage, dancing around them, sniffing and whining for all she's worth. The rat dogs don't seem bothered by her at all. They carry on with their eating or grooming or climbing, but occasionally they come up to the bars to have a sniff of her, and if they do so quickly, Star gets the shock of her life. She skitters away as fast as she can, then stands and stares at them as if she's trying to work out what they are. Silly girl, she hasn't quite got the grasp of things that I have. With the help of Water Pistol, Star is beginning to accept the newcomers. But heaven help us when these new dogs get big enough to leave their crate and live in the house with us all the time. Walks will be such fun with so many leads to tangle around our people's legs. I can't wait. Another new addition to the house is a tree. Yes, a tree indoors. I have this one figured out too, though. With the weather turning so cold, my people don't want me to have to visit the cold, windy, wet garden every time I need a bathroom break. In their kindness, they have bought a tree inside so I can relieve myself in the warmth and shelter of my own lounge. They have even decorated it with lights and all manner of shiny, glittery things, so I can't miss it and won't forget to use it. I bet Silly Star won't get the hang of that one either. Oh well, there's no helping some people. Till next time.
A vacuum cleaner can produce a high-frequency sound which may frighten some dogs.
We've had an email from Judith in Switzerland, who has a black lab called Simba, who is nearly 4 years old. The problem Judith has with Simba is that she eats anything and everything she comes across. To quote Judith, she goes under the trees and eats fruits and nuts, picks berries, eats earthworms, dry or alive, and worse. When she's eating things like this, she doesn't listen to Judith, although she still gets distracted by strange people and dogs. Judith rewards with a biscuit if Simba does listen, but says if she hides, it takes Simba a long time to even notice she's hiding. I've tried that with Buddy and got the same reaction. A long line helped, but as soon as the line is off, Simba knows she is free and makes the most of it. I've sent Judith a few ideas that worked with Buddy, like a water pistol or reinforcing the leave command, but I wondered what solutions you might have. If you've got a brilliant idea to help Judith and Simba, let us know. The Company of Animals has announced that it is donating the profits from its inaugural Dog Train and Behave Week initiative to its supporting charities, including Hearing Dogs for Deaf People, the Blue Cross, Battersea Dogs and Cats Home, and Dogs for the Disabled. The Company of Animals has also given 100 classic Kong toys to each charity, helping to make tails wag with much fun and perfect Kong activity this Christmas. You may remember that the aim of Dog Train and Behave Week is to promote responsible and informed dog ownership at all levels nationwide. It emphasises that training is the best weapon to counter anti-dog legislation because a trained dog is both happier and more manageable. 2007 may not be quite over yet, but looking forward, the dates for the Dog Train and Behave Week 2008 will be announced in the new year. Check out www.dogtrainandbehaveweek.com and get ready to be involved. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. from any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
I went to my vet really worried after my dog swallowed a roll of film, but he said, "Don't worry, nothing serious will develop."